Hello and welcome to the Veeam Community Podcast. I'm your host, Rick Vanover. This is episode 3. Give me some free stuff. Here we go. Today our guest is Jason Perlow. Jason, how you doing, man?
Hey, what's up, Rickatron? What's going on, dude?
Oh, Rickatron, a name throughout the ages, known worldwide. But unfortunately, Rickatron.com is held by a guy that just says, hey, got a website. Isn't this cool? So every time every time anybody looks it up, they're like, Rick, you know, you think you could do a little bit better than that, right? And I'm like, no, that's the wrong dude. Same thing with Twitter. Some other guy got it before me, so.
I know somebody else took Perlow.
Oh.
So I had to take J. Perlow. So Perlow is like some teenage chick in Manhattan that's like always talking about like the Kardashians or something. I'm like, people think like, Jason, you're like into really stupid stuff, man. I'm like, no, that's the wrong account.
It's man, that's wicked. I think that's actually probably a little bit more entertaining than the two people that have my, you know, nickname that I'd rather have.
But at the same time, I was smart enough when Gmail first came out. I took J. Perlow at gmail.com, and I took Perlow at hotmail.com.
There's a guy where I live. I live in Columbus, Ohio, that has the same name, first and last name, Rick Vanover. And apparently he's on a big number of softball teams. And I would get all these calls. Hey, Rick. Hey, man. Steve canceled on the team. Can you come out and play? And I'd be like, yeah, sure, but I think you got the wrong dude, you know. So it's kind of funny, you know. You think you might have a somewhat unique name, but not so much, it seems.
Yeah.
So, hey, for all the listeners out there, Jason and I kind of go way back in the blogosphere in terms of commercial blogging. Him and I both have blogged at different sites for CBS Interactive. Jason blogs at ZDNet.com on the Tech Broiler blog. And he also has a really cool food blog at offthebroiler.wordpress.com. And, you know, we've met through those circles before. And one of the areas that we met, or at least had an active discussion, was a blog post that Jason had one time. And it was kind of funny. I think the blog post was VMFS3, Oh How I Hate Thee, or something like that.
Yes, something like that.
It's kind of funny. You had a great number of comments and stuff, because you're right. It just flipping sucks to pick up a VMDK and move it around.
Yep, and that's one of the things we're going to talk about tonight.
Yeah, free stuff, because there's a lot of different free products out there in virtualization. We'll talk about that. And then, Jason, for the listeners out there, you know, I just mentioned how we've worked, you know, kind of crossed in the blogosphere before. But, Jason, tell us just basically a little bit about, you know, what you do, where you're from, and all that.
Sure. So I live in the New York metropolitan area, also called New Jersey. I tell people I'm from New York, because if I say New Jersey, like, oh, yeah, you go down to the Jersey Shore, are you friends with Snooki? I'm like, no. And Snooki's not even from New Jersey, so, you know, she doesn't count. But, I'm a native New Yorker. I grew up in this area. And I now officially full-time work for the server optimization and consolidation practice for IBM. I've been with IBM since 2007. I'm an infrastructure architect, and my area of specialization is client-server infrastructure and design. So I tend to work a lot with virtualization technologies, and a lot of what our revenue these days is simplifying infrastructure for large customers, and that means a lot of virtualization, an awful lot.
You know, and you probably bump into people at all levels of the virtualization journey, right? Already there, just starting, never heard of it. You know, what kind of things do you see out in the field?
The whole gamut. I mean, we get people that have been early adopters of VMware since day one, you know, that started off with VMware 1.0 on the desktop, and mm-hmm. started off with the very first versions of ESX, you know, and we go all the way up to people that have never seen virtualization on x86 before. Some that do virtualization only on Z series or on AIX or Solaris, or need to migrate from one Unix virtualization platform to another, you know, all kinds of mixed environments. So it's, you know, even containers.
Mm-hmm. I had in my other experience back in the day, we had parallel, you know, sides. We had VIO virtualization and then the VMware platform. But, you know, from a growth standpoint, you know, gosh, VMware, you know, x86 virtualization is, you know, you're seeing it. It's through the roof, I'm sure, comparatively, right?
It is exploding, and as a matter of fact, I'm seeing far less physical infrastructure being built now. I mean, it used to be that, you know, you could make a judgment call about I.O., you know, and the way that you know, the performance characteristics of an application, whether or not it should be virtualized or not. I mean, you'd say, oh, is it a database? Well, no, it shouldn't be virtualized. But now, that's not the case. I'm seeing production databases, not just development servers being put on, you know, for SQL Server and Oracle being fully virtualized.
Well, yeah, so, yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
And, you know, I mean, well, we'd still have big honking physical database servers running on Unix and on Linux machines and also on SQL Server clusters. I mean, I'll tell you, between Hyper-V and vSphere 4, you know, we're really starting to see major performance improvements in I/O. So I think we're going to reach a point where we're never going to see physical servers ever again.
Yeah, I think it's going to be that, you know, that one off exception eventually. And you bring up a good point that you mentioned earlier, is, you know, that extreme I/O. And I mean, I'm guilty of it. Too many times I do, you know, you'll do capacity planning by the, you know, by your instinct, if you will, right? You know, but you know, nowadays you got to have a tool that tells you what's going on, you know, as far as monitoring, you know, your queues and for I/O and, you know, memory swap or whatever the, you know, whatever the metric is, you got to have the right tool. And you know, there's a good thing is you know, there's a crap load of stuff out there for free. I mean,
there is.
Yeah, I mean, even a free hypervisor. You know, we've got ESXi, Xen, and, you know, Hyper-V, all with different levels of functionality, are all out there for free. And you know, even our beloved Oracle VirtualBox, Jason and I both kind of like VirtualBox. You know,
I've had a love-hate relationship with VirtualBox.
You know, I gotta say, not until last month have I used VMware Workstation, you know, regularly. I have always been VirtualBox, but when I started the role with Veeam, they you know, we do a lot of lab stuff with Workstation on our laptops. Even though I don't have the super duper kick butt mow your grass, you know, mobile desktop that some of the other engineers have, but I do have Workstation, and I have a, kind of a real basic lab capability. But I kind of like what the other guys were doing, and you know, for storage space to have like the Link clone and all that is kind of cool. But you know, yeah, there's so many cool tools out there. You know, it's just wicked what you can do with cool free stuff out there. In fact, you know, when we were talking about the VMFS thing, that's what actually, you know, to do my own cheap plug on my own podcast, okay, that's what actually was the very first tool I ever used from Veeam, was the FastSCP file transfer tool, because that was actually their first product too, and that's always been free.
And that is an indispensable product. I mean, I got to tell you, we were talking earlier about the article that I wrote about how I hate VMFS3. And actually, I think VMFS3 is a fantastic clustered file system. Problem is, it's a black box.
Mm-hmm.
And if you manage, you know, a lot of storage and a lot of data stores in a VMware environment, we all know that, you know, moving data between data stores using you know, the vCenter client or the vSphere client, mm-hmm, can be something of a it can be like watching, you know, slugs go uphill in the wintertime.
Mm-hmm.
So it's good to be able to just bypass that VMware infrastructure and just copy direct from file system to file system.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, without, you know, a good tool, you can't do it.
No, you're right.
You know, and Veeam's product, which is free, again, we emphasize free,
yep,
you know, it's drag and drop, blam. You know, you're moving entire VMBKs across your land at high speeds,
right?
Which is nice.
Yeah, and you know? Yeah, and I've always liked it for that purpose, to get into that. I don't want to call it, I guess you could call it a black box. Some people call it a closed file system, but I like to think of VMFS as more of a purpose-built file system that, you know, really is host to data store, period. That's what it's made to do, and it does that well. And then really, to get out of it, we're kind of having to work around it every single way. And, I mean, the main options are something like FastSCP, which uses the, I guess it's the web interface or the API. I don't exactly know. But the other option, which is less preferred, is turning on secure FTP.
Yeah,
exactly. That's the same reaction pretty much everybody gives, you know, to it. But that's it. You know, that's all you've got.
And, you know, nowadays everything's on DVD-ROM images, right? It's not just, you know, so like if you got a copy, a 4.5 gigabyte image via SFTP, good luck with that.
Yeah, it's unfortunate because it's your chances aren't looking too good.
No, even on the best of lands, it's not looking too good.
Even with the vSphere client, it's just crap. I think it's crappy, honestly.
You know, that's the. I mean, I God knows, I love VMware. I think it's a great enterprise product. I do not like the vSphere client for Windows. I really think they should just completely make that, completely web based, and have native Linux clients or something, because like. It tends to blow up so much.
Well,
you know, and it takes up so much memory. I mean, I can't believe how much memory that thing eats up.
Well, let me just say that be careful what you wish for, because I was playing with some of the new VMware products like vCloud Director, vCenter Chargeback. Those are all web-based, and they're weird because some of them look just like it.
Do you think the problem is that that vCenter is a Windows-based product? I mean, if you look at what the way VMware is evolving as a company, it seems they're going in a very Linux-y direction with what their acquisitions are.
Yeah. I mean, you could say that. Think about it. This is the way I heard it once that I think is the best way to put it, and it starts with the guest operating system. You know. You don't want to be placed underneath Microsoft forever, okay?
No.
So you're seeing those things like Zimbra, you know, their email package, and I think VMware internally is migrating to that. So you're having VMware crawl up the stack in their own non-Microsoft flavor. So it's a natural conclusion what you just said. So I think yes is the answer, but you know, I'm all for open standards, open things, but on the other hand. If you had to choose a platform, it would be Windows. You know, you're handed the built-in security model with, you know, Active Directory. You know, it's the safe bet. You know, you don't put out.
Active Directory is an excellent authentication system. I think it's probably one of the best built, directories God, my brain is just like not working.
Directory services.
Yeah, it's one of the best directory services products, you know, that's ever been built. I mean, it's based on LDAP 3. I mean, it's gone through years and years of revision. I mean, at this point, Active Directory is it's 10 years old. Is it 10 years old this year as of 2011? Because they introduced it in 1999 with Windows 2000. So it's humming now.
Yeah, very few products last 10 years and retain that crown of, you know, the best in breed. You know, that's like I just saw the other day Microsoft Excel is 25 years old this week or whatever.
Yeah, and did you know that the first platform that they introduced it on was Macintosh?
Yeah, I thought that was kind of odd, actually.
And then they went to OS 2.
Yeah.
And then Windows.
Yeah. And the funny thing is that every now and then, and you kind of, you know, as a commercial blogger especially, you kind of sometimes have to pick a fight, you know, in your content, or at least throw something out there that people will at least respond to. And every now and then I do that with Twitter. And one time I tweeted, group policy and Active Directory are the best products that Microsoft ever made. Just to pick a fight, okay? And I actually do think that's really true.
It probably is true.
But people still were like, what are you talking about? It's just LDAP. And I'm like, well, no, it's not just LDAP. But, you know, it's just kind of weird because, yeah, it's if you had to make a decision and a standard, you'd have to align with Windows, okay, in that sense. So that's kind of why VMware started that way. And honestly, it's probably easier to develop it quickly in that sense because, honestly, the hypervisor has always been, you know, always brought the features. And the vCenter 2.5 era, you know, it was like, well, vCenter is a single point of failure, so they addressed that with Heartbeat. And then, you know, it wasn't federated, it didn't scale, so they introduced linked mode. You know, so they've brought it up, and I think that your comments of observation of the Linuxiness, yeah, that's not necessarily, I'm not going to disagree with you by any mean. So one other thing, Jason, I want to talk about though is, you know, we're talking about free stuff and there's a lot of free stuff out there. We mentioned FastSCP, you know, of course the free hypervisors and, of course we all know about Linux free OSs and stuff. But, you know, if I'm, you know, if I know you, you're probably like the second most cheap SOB out there besides myself.
Yes.
So, you know, besides some of those other tools, what other things do you like out there, free virtualization or not virtualization related?
I happen to think VMware, you were talking about VMware Workstation. VMware Player is actually, I think, a great little product. I mean, and it doesn't cost anything. You can actually, you know, you can actually create virtual machines with VMware Player 3, and it uses the same virtualization engine as VMware Workstation.
Right, right.
And I've given it to people that have, that, you know, you'd never think would use virtualization.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, like mothers-in-law and like friends that, you know, like the biggest problem I see is when you move from an old computer to a new computer, right? Especially
mm-hmm.
people that have had XP machines they've been using forever.
Mm-hmm.
They got all these programs, they may not have the media for it anymore.
Right.
So, like, the new machine that you buy in Costco, right, your basic $600 Dell, it's going to be, like, 8 times more powerful than what some of these people have had before.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, if you run VMware Converter on, like, some cheap, you know, USB drive, because that computer probably had, what, like, a couple of gig hard drive, maybe 10, 20, 30, 40 gig hard drive. Well, gosh, I mean, you can run VMware Converter on it and then dump it on their new computer, you know, with VMware Player. They got all their stuff.
Yeah.
And you didn't have to reinstall anything.
Right on. And then they cry about, where's the baby picture from whatever? Well, just power up that VM and there it is.
Click the button that says old PC. Bam, it's there.
You know, it's funny. I did the same
thing. That's exactly what I did. Yeah. That's exactly, yeah.
But I did it a little bit more uber dork. The new PC for the in-law was definitely capable, so it definitely had that. But, you know, it's one of those things, the in-laws come up and they bring their PC.
Yeah.
Okay. So they came up, and I think I went, at the time, it was from Windows 98 to Vista. Okay.
Oh, wow.
And I only did it because I had a free copy of Vista. It was,
oh, no.
What was it? I attended a Microsoft launch event, and it was a door prize. Because I wouldn't have done it. I wouldn't have bought it. And, you know, especially this was in the Vista, you know, naysayer era.
Yeah.
But I got a free copy of Vista, and then I PDV'd the Windows 98 box, and I put it on my VMware server product at home, okay? And I set up Log Me In and everything so that they could get to it from the internet, and I was like my own little private cloud hosting their old PC.
You became your own cloud ISP.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, they never used it. Never. I mean, I still have it in the VM mausoleum, okay? But,
right.
You know, it's one of those things that VMware server, really, because that product is effectively deprecated from the...
Yeah.
You know,
I used it a ton, actually, when it was out, VMware Server 2.0 and VMware Server 1.0. That was a great product. But and now, of course, we've all moved to ESXi.
Mm-hmm.
Which, hey, don't get me wrong, I love ESXi, but the hardware requirements of getting that thing running in a home lab when they first came out with it was not easy.
No,
it's gotten easier, but it's still not as easy as just like booting up a Red Hat and throwing, you know, VMware Server on it. It's a totally different animal. I mean, I had to buy a special, you know, SCSI / you know, SAS controller to connect SATA drives to so that I could have storage that could be recognized. I mean, that's crazy stuff like that.
Yeah, it is,
you know,
tough.
You know,
I spent the money and bought a ProLiant server for the Rickatron lab, but not everybody wants to do that, you know, and I don't blame them.
No, and you can go out and go to Microsoft, right, or Citrix, right, and you can download either Hyper-V Server or Zen Server 5 on a Costco PC.
Costco PC.
And it'll work because, like, most of those things have the Intel. Well, you have to check your chipset,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yep.
You got to make sure that you have the AMD 64. Was it the two? On the Intel world, it's called VT. VTX and on the AMD where it's in AMD, it's AMD-V. But as long as you have a chip that can do that, as long as you check the model of the chip and it can do hardware virtualization, right? And everything now today is a 64-bit piece system, unless it's like a really low-end laptop or a netbook. Any of those Costco / Best Buy $500 specials can do virtualization.
And I do remember, I think it was Eric Siebert was doing a blog post, a series of blog posts about using the new HP Micro Server for ESX in a home lab with a native install.
I haven't tried one of those guys yet.
Yeah, I think it's $250.
Really?
Yeah. Now, the problem is you do have to add RAM. So let's just add another $50 to it. But
yeah, whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, but I think, you know, and it's a – I don't want to call it a Pro Line. I, you know, if I was good and did, like, fancy notes for this podcast, I'd have it, like, ready. But, you know, for the world, we just Google Eric Siebert server lab. You'll find it. So, but no, I saw that floating out there. And, you know, the other side of that is, you know, Hyper-V and Windows, their driver support is way better.
Phenomenal.
Yeah. So, if you want to set up a Hyper-V lab, you know, buying those Costco PCs.
Yeah, because Hyper-V, I mean, is basically, you know, Zen Domain 1 on Domain 0 on Windows.
Right.
So anything that Windows supports as a device driver works under Hyper-V.
Right.
So that's basically everything in existence from day one.
Yeah.
You know, as far as machines, as long as you have a 64-bit system, right, and you have that virtualization bit enabled on your chip, you're good to go.
Yeah. I'm lazy. I have one big server down in the lab that I natively have ESXi installed on, 4.1, and I have four ESXi virtual machines in there. So I have a cluster of four.
ESXi in – wait. So you're virtualizing ESXi in ESXi?
Oh, yeah, baby. Come on. Yeah. Yes.
What?
Well, that's that way I can test vCenter functions, cluster functions.
Oh, I see. So you can prototype vCenter. Okay, I got
you. And I cheat, okay? So I don't really care what those four virtual ESXi servers are doing in terms of their virtual machines. So I fill them up with 4 megabyte RAM Pixie Boot VMs. No, seriously. I mean, I get 50 VMs running in there.
I'm vMotioning 4 meg RAM.
Yeah. But you know what the real kick in the –
Because I can.
Exactly, because I can. But, you know, that's a good way to test, you know, scripting and moving a
right,
bunch of things.
Right,
because
right.
It's not a performance lab. It's a functionality lab.
Yeah.
You know? So, but you know what the real kick in the knee is that the memory overhead for each VM is like 100 meg. You know,
so the memory overhead, because the spawn is actually bigger than the size of the VM that you're creating.
Yeah, I'm looking at one right now. Yeah, I mean, I think it's like 116 mega RAM. I don't know exactly how the memory overhead is calculated.
Can you still do stuff like ESX top and stuff with ESXi? I don't think you can, right? Because there's no console.
It's not ESX top. You want to use the CLI, the vSphere CLI, and it's RESX top. I have to look that up. It's out there, you know.
I'm still mourning the loss of the console.
You know, here's what I did. I went all ESXi from the jump from 3.5 to 4.0.
Yeah.
And I'm a happy guy. And see, and that's the other thing. I never spent my whole day looking at ESX top. So why would I need to do it in ESXi?
True.
You know, if you had to spend your whole day looking at ESX top, my knee-jerk reaction from the outside is, well, why are you spending your whole day looking at ESX top? Yeah, some people like text menus. I don't know.
You have a good point, but I spent so much of my VCP training, you know, really learning the console that I kind of feel like, well, gosh darn it. I'm like, you know, what did I learn all that stuff for?
Well, you know, you bring up a good point because, you know, you need to be able to troubleshoot. And
it was cool to be able to do that and to be able to recycle services and things. And sometimes you have issues like, all right, fine. Let's get into storage issues and LUNs and resetting and resetting HBAs and all that kind of stuff. You know, and we all know, we work in large environments with lots of host bus adapters and lots of LUNs and lots of data stores. Sometimes the only way of getting, of seeing your storage again is rebooting the host.
Right.
Because you don't have the ability anymore to recycle that stuff at a low level anymore without the console.
I've found the one time I've really had to do it is when I've had to change like HBA option, like from FCAL to from arbitrated loop to point to point. You know that BIOS setting on HBA. You know, like that's like stupid default option number 5. Okay. you know, to have FCAL as a default, you know, or something like that, or not auto-negotiate fiber rates, you know, something
right.
like that. So, but hey, let's kind of round up here. I just want to throw a quick shot out. You know, Jason and I are just talking about stuff, including free stuff. I'm just going to throw a cheap plug out for Veeam. You know, we mentioned FastSCP, but you know, we also have Veeam Business View, Veeam Reporter, Veeam Monitor. Also have free editions. I encourage everybody to go check those out from the website. Especially the Reporter and Monitor pieces. They have some free editions that they're limited in the duration they give you, but you know, they'll tell you within like the last 24 hours. You know, like drive latency issues or you know, different things like memory issues in the virtual machines. You know, kind of an aggregate view of your environment. Pretty cool stuff. I encourage everybody to check it out. But, Jason, I got to put you on the spot for something.
Uh-oh.
Every podcast has a gimmick, and mine is called Three Views from You, okay? So I want to ask you three different questions, one in the past, your personal past, one in the present, and one looking towards the future. So answer each of these questions, or, you know, the first question will be targeted to the past, so keep that in mind. So Jason, as a technologist, what is the most interesting technical role, story, or thing you've been doing in your career at some point that you can share with us in your past?
As a systems integration specialist, you know, I've worked with all kinds of high-end, you know, enterprise customers, banks, institutional, but I did at one point in my career have a chance to actually help set up a VidCam and download service for a customer.
This is a family show, you know.
Yeah, but you know what? They are actually the biggest adopters of technology. They drive technology adoption. All the cool stuff that we get to play with as consumers, guess what?
Well,
they do it first.
I've heard that, you know, and I actually think that the consumerization of IT has kind of taken that now with iPads and whoever's and whatever's and stuff. But, you know, you bring up a good point. In my experience, I did a logistics project for a company. They refer to themselves as a small studio film company. So
yeah.
That's, you know, that was the, you know, the dressed up version of it. So, okay, well, interesting. So, like, Jason, and today, what in your work experience is going on pretty cool, gets you most excited? What kind of things are you doing right now today that are, you know, pretty cool right now?
Well, you know, it's interesting. These days, you know, in this economy, it's all about trying to save customers money while at the same time help them keep their employees' jobs, right? Because, like, you don't want to be working in this. The one of the things I hated about 2008 in 2009 was, like, a lot of what I did was designing solutions that I knew were going to result in people losing their jobs. Because it was all pure 100% cost reduction, all, you know, figuring out, you know, we need to save $500 million over the next 5 years. Tell me exactly, you know, of the 8,000 servers we got, we need to bring it down to 2,000. And tell me of these 8 facilities we got, we need to bring it down to 2, right? And you know that means headcount.
Sure.
Well, we're still doing consolidation, but we are more, instead of displacing people, you know, we're hiring other people's staff. We're bringing them on as contractors or full-time employees, and we're more in a trusted advisor role than it used to be. So it's I'm happy to see that we're turning the corner.
Sure.
You know, in the IT industry, I think 2011 is going to be a very good year.
That's cool, trusted advisor. That's a good way of putting it. Because yeah, you're right. We all are in the business of doing technology, so it's kind of like that two hat thing that you're describing. Yeah, I totally relate. Good way of putting it. So finally, Jason, looking forward into the future, what do you see as kind of like really exciting, really cool in the future of technology?
Well, you know, I actually wrote an article today about I actually think we're going to start seeing virtualization on devices.
Sure.
Because you know, I don't know if you got an Android or an iPhone or something like that, but the rate at which these devices are coming out I mean, like, with software. I mean, I know that a big beef that people have with Android is when am I getting updated to the new software, right? Mm-hmm. You know, they buy something, then 6 months goes by, and they're like, well, why didn't I get the latest update? Well, it's because the pace of the hardware development is so far exceeding their ability to update the stuff.
Yep.
That because every single time they come out with a new phone, they got to rebuild the Android OS, they got to reintegrate all their software. Mm-hmm. So now I'm looking at these companies, like one of them I wrote about was called Open Kernel Labs, and they figured out how to put virtualization on a smartphone. So that just the same way that in an enterprise we create templates of Windows OS is that we can just re-spin a different way. Like we have a standard IIS server build that we can just template. Well, guess what? Now you can just template an Android.
Oh yeah.
And you can run that on anybody's cell phone that runs that what they call a microvisor. So instead of us having hypervisor, mm-hmm. we're going to have microvisors on consumer electronics devices. So we won't have to wait, you know, 10, 15 months to get an update. It'll be the second Google has an OS, within 5 or 6 days they create the template and everybody can get it.
Sure.
And that's so I think we're going to be seeing really rapid growth of technology in the consumer space. With virtualization, it's not just going to be an enterprise word anymore. It's going to be something that we're going to see in the household.
Well, I think that's the only way we're going to be able to do it. Think of the time to market requirement. If we can write a virtual machine for the microvisor, then the device doesn't matter, right?
That's right.
And that's the only way we're going to be able to push them so quick.
That's right.
So I agree with you 100%. In fact, I had said a while ago that I wouldn't be surprised in a couple years if on your Android you could run a BlackBerry ROM.
Yep.
Get your enterprise encryption that, you know, keeps everybody happy.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's the thing. You'll be able actually probably – the way that I see things going is instead of buying a quote-unquote BlackBerry or buying a quote-unquote Android mm-hmm. or even a quote-unquote iPhone or a quote-unquote Windows phone – you know, HTC will make one generic, or maybe they'll make three body types. Like when you go out and you buy a car, right? You don't worry. It doesn't just come in one color, right? You go into the Chevy dealership. They got a sedan. They got a truck. They got a pickup. And they got a van, right? Well, you can get it in blue. You can get it in black. You can get it in velour. You can get it in leather. Well, that's exactly the same way you should be able to buy a cell phone, right? You should be able to say, I want this body. I want Windows on it. And I want it in red or whatever. Or I want this type of module on it or something, or this type of screen. And you shouldn't have to buy something in one flavor.
Oh yeah, right? I'm with you. And have you seen that Motorola Atrix, by the way?
Yep, that looks slick, that thing.
I was drooling when my boss told me about that. That's
awesome. Oh yeah, I mean a cell phone that turns into a laptop, that's awesome.
That's awesome. Well, hey man, let's wrap it up here. Real quick, Jason on Twitter, you are J Perlow, PERLOW, is that correct?
That's right.
All right, cool. And you mentioned his two blogs earlier. And, hey, man, what's going on with the Frugal Tech Show? I haven't
– You know what? Both Ken and I have been really, really busy. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like towards the end of the year, we all hit, like, our 14-hour work days. So yeah. It was like, you know what happens. But we're looking to start that up again shortly.
Right. So Jason does the Frugal Tech Show podcast. I mentioned the Tech Broiler blog. And then offthebroiler.wordpress.com. And then if you haven't taken in enough Perlow – there's also a really cool Flickr stream if you are a foodie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then myself, I'm Rick Vanover on Twitter, at Rick Vanover. And I also contribute to the Veeam Twitter account, at Veeam. Jason, thanks for being on.
You got it, man.
Cheers.